Accession number 18357, Reel 4.
Tom Carroll, Reel 4.
Well, on the boat out, I read T. Lawrence's Seven Pillars of Wisdom. And I read there how T. Lawrence had been into trouble and couldn't get and the headquarters at Cairo let him down, and he made some promises which were all reneged on. And that was if you read T. Lawrence's, he was very angry about that. And oddly enough, my grandfather was also involved there, which I heard later. Anyway, forget that. I read that, and how he disapproved and had no trust ever again on the British staff officers, the way they behaved to him. And I realized they were doing this, all this repeating itself. They were doing it to me. And what they were saying was the people I was dealing with were traitors and that I shouldn't have been involved. Now, they also heard that somewhere, the other things they heard, that I was using the fact that I was Irish and I was recruiting more people for the Irish rebellion in order to get the Irish. And they regarded that as very serious. It was a court-martial offence, as someone mentioned that. So I said, right, I'm not going back. Okay, so you can forget about all the whole of that resistance will fall down if I don't go back. They are totally overwhelming. So he said, well, I can't do much about that, Carew. And so I said, well, never mind. He said, well, anyway, let's certainly have a look at the army, what's happening now. So he rolled up his map and opened up his secret map and showed it. And there was some intelligence things. He with different names on, Pig and some of the others. And he said, tell me, what is about these intelligence information there? I said, he said, who are these people? I said, have you got any other source of intelligence but those? He said, no, they're all different ones. I said, they're not all different, they're all mine. He said, what? I said, all this will close down if I don't come back. So it immediately changed. The whole thing changed straight away. And from that moment on, I wondered if he realized that this is not the sort of thing he was willing to lose, that information. And so then I made a point then of writing out something on some paper about the fact that these people were not to be arrested and got freedom. And somehow I wrote on it one side of this paper only, or something, and I gave it to someone I could trust in Cox's Bazaar, which is where their big headquarters was, and he had it. And you know, and later on, they tried to renege on it and said there were exceptions written on the back. When the whistle was blown in the end. And then, furthermore, I was in serious trouble because they had dropped a lot of arms. And they said that all those arms are going to be used against the British if you don't recover them. Recover them? You've got to recover those arms? I mean, to be able to live on them. So, well, that's it. And they were very serious about it. And they were. I was going to be in very serious trouble. And so, when I got back and told to John and the opinion of this, I said, can you get some arms together we'll see if we can find any. He said, I'll fix that. And what he did was on Akiab port, he had put the 2,000, whatever it was, arms, and another 2,000. Now, that was a lovely bit of Burmese typical. So he said, fuck you, if you do this. And I told them that. And when later on I told that to, they still didn't want to me to get away with it. You know, even the fact that I could double the arms recovery to what they had been given. The market, they were Japanese, and there were a whole lot of, they were arms, even if they weren't very good ones. And there was another story I told Mountbatten, and he said, yes, that's, he had no trust in those staff officers either. He and I got on very well.
You were telling me earlier about the successes of your first session in Burma when you were in the Arakan, but what you said very little about whether or not the second session was successful in the Tonggo area.
No. The second session wasn't at all successful. I thought it was going to be the greatest thing ever. Let me tell you, can I go back to, now that I remind you, can I go back to the, we're talking about Chan Shah. Now, the army came through, and I had a sarong and a beard, and a pistol. I didn't carry too many arms. I didn't go around sort of with guns and everything else. I had the minimum. And then, when it came through, who should be commanding the army coming down? With a man called Bob Mansurk, well known, well loved by everybody. He was the guy, he was the man who's, when I was being interviewed as an army cadet, and I told you earlier that except for the army, the war office has commissioned all officers, we wouldn't commission you. And he was the adjutant standing beside the general there. And he made it quite clear he couldn't stand me. But I was exactly opposite. He was a proper, regular, intelligent, bright, good army officer. And was had his desert. He was commanding the army going down through Burma. When they overran, I knocked on and sort of saw who they were. And they were hauling through the paddy fields, tanks, and enormous great radio caravan. Pumping radio message up through the air. And it was enormous. And they were being dragged through the paddy fields getting stuck. And they had a big marquee tent. When I arrived there was a big marquee tent, which the General Bob Mansay was there. He recognized me, but he didn't want to know me, because I had a sarong on. I hadn't worn proper clothes. And a beard, and I was just one of the boys. And he saw me, and he really, I couldn't believe it. He put in, I was invited to dinner. Somebody else, a signals man, I think, invited to dinner. And I had only three or four chairs away from the general. And they weren't being exactly served with kid gloves, but they were pretty. There were the batmen and the generals and the table, the food and everything else, right in the middle of the battleground, you know, going through. And I heard the general say to the head of signals, "Why the bloody hell can't you get through?" And I heard him, they couldn't get through where their headquarters was, about 250 miles away to the north. I'll tell you the name of the town. I mean, and he couldn't get through there. And he was, the signals man said, "We can't get through." And he said, "I must get through. I must get some things sent down, or must get a surprise coming through." And there was quite a row going. And the general man said, "You can't." So I said to him, "General, is it true you can't get any messages through?" "Yes, Guru. Yes." I said, "Would you like me to do it for you?" "I can get through." There was a silence, and he denied it. He said, "No, I'm serious." He said, "How?" "I said, I'm not at liberty to tell you." You have the idea, the silence, and the problem there, what was going on. But the silly buggers, they hadn't realized I was getting through to Calcutta, Skywave, and I just had to tell Calcutta to come back this way and do that short hop of 250 miles, which they couldn't do. They'd not thought of it. Now, that was the ultimate relationship with the army. They were not to have thought of that. And we got through. Now, John Sharp, I don't think he knew that, because I mentioned it to him the other day. We had a reunion at Peterborough the other day. And I said to him, "John, do you remember that time?" He said, "I don't remember that." But that's a true story, and that was absolutely... And that was the epitomized by my relationship with the army. The army thought I was a disaster. You know, they really always thought I was a disaster. In actual fact, you know, I had disability. In my head, they hadn't thought of that. And that happened during the dinner party. Could you think of a brighter final contact with Bob Mansack, who all the other officers adored? He was hero worshipped by everybody.
What kind of cooperation from the Burmese population did you get in the operations you did in Burma?
I didn't get any cooperation from the population. The population didn't even know about me. I just managed to collect up a group of people who were my two people, my priest and my robber chieftain, my Dakota chieftain. They knew how to collect people, and they had that Islami, and we ran that.
Who was this Dakota chieftain?
Why don't you
Can you tell me more about him? I don't mean his name.
Well, he was like a lot of people. He used to drink himself to death. But we got on so well. He roughed. You know that man playing tennis at the moment? Call that an Australian with hair around back. Rafter. He's very like Rafter. I saw Rafter that. Just like the same sort of man. The thin, very sort of wiry strength.
How had you come across him?
Well, these were the two people shooting each other. Well, I said to you, I sent them down, find out where they were, and they came up. And they were chums of mine forever. We had a trio, the three of us had a ball.
And the other one was a priest?
The other was a priest, yes. In a yellow robe, like that, that colour.
A bonze.
Yes.
But the other man was literally a gang robber?
Yes. But there was a very respectable profession in Burma.
What exactly did they help you to do? What kind of aid did
they do? Well, they formed. They used the guns. We had a game with the Japanese. If we found one or two Japanese, we knocked them off. The principle we ran was to knock those off. And the more we knocked those off, the more they closed up. And the more we knocked three or four of them off, then it closed up. So eventually we got them concentrated into quite small areas, you know, where they realized it was too dangerous for them to wander around on their own. They no longer had that sort of control. When they closed up then, we then all an airstrike. It worked quite a good system, method. And that was our game. that was in simple words, that was that. But there were times when it would swing. We were in trouble, and others had been not.
So how much damage to the Japanese war effort do you think that you managed to arrange?
I think we contributed to it. I don't think that... I think they still thought that... I think we made a contribution, tied them up, lured their morale, generally.
But evidently, the first session was more successful than the second.
Oh, yes.
Why was that?
Well, because the second one, I dropped in, we dropped in, and then we dropped into the real politicians. And they were good, okay. Well, the secretary of the cabinet, I had got on quite well with it, the Minister of Transport and Commodities, he was a tough egg. He really was a tough egg. And we seemed to get on quite well. But nothing ever happened. You know, they were not really all that interested in the military side of our operation. They were interested in the political side of what we were doing and getting contact and generally. They were cunning people, like good Burmans, good Burman politicians, they were cunning. But there was a time when clearly things were... we didn't ever get a good strike. It always was about to happen. It never really happened. And we got to the stage once when I realized that the armies were coming through and the whole situation was changing fast. That is, the Burmans would be soon taking over from the Japanese, and the Brits were coming in, and the Burma, the Japs were losing the battle. At this stage, I realised things were kind of serious, because I suddenly realised we were a nuisance to them. They didn't want me any longer, all my little small little team, Bill Brown, I think, and someone, he disappeared at some stage. Anyway, our small team, then Brit by John Sharp, I mean, religion. So I, oh shit, I cannot, I didn't have no compunction of wiping people out. I'm sure of that. So what I did was, again, well, the brightest thing I've done, the very brightest move. I said to them, I explained to them, look, you've been marvellous to me, the Burmans have been terrific, I've enjoyed my time with you, and the army's coming soon. And what I've done to is I've sent a message back to Calcutta, congratulating me, to you, saying how marvellous you've been, and also saying that I put my soul safety in your hands. And if anything happened to me, you know, they were to ask you, and what happened to me, and you were responsible. And they had the grace to laugh. Because then, you see, they would not, they said, well, I keep wiping you out. You see, and I showed them my message. I said, I've already sent that one. And so that went along. I was a bit secure, safer. But they would have wiped us out. We were nuisance. Because they were having their own political rows at that stage. Which of the Burmese forces were going to take over? And that sort of thing. And they were out there, and I had that feeling that this was our relationship, and they were ruthless, and they were in a ruthless game.
But when you went in the second time, had it been arranged that you would go in to make contact with
those people? Yes, they were waiting for me. And my other people I'd left behind, it was back in Arakan.
And whereabouts did these people live? In Tongo?
Lived in the jungle, wasn't it? They left the Rangoon. This is where they had been. They had been in the cabinet, they came to me, because I was spread from there, and we thought we'd get together. This is good. Now we will we'll say we're very nice, we'll apologize to the and we hope we'll come in with the new army coming in. And then I gave them was... To, now, that time also, although I didn't meet him then, was Aung San, the general, who got eventually assassinated. And his daughter is now Aung San Suu Kyi. Now, Aung San, when eventually we came through, then Bill Slim was in charge then, of the army then. And Aung San, the general, the Burmese general, Aung San, was under arrest, locked up. So I then had to go out there. I didn't have to. I went up to Bill Slim and said, look, I think you'll find that you'll get more cooperation from the Burmese if you don't lock him up and put him on trial. And I had a long thing about that with him. And he didn't see it at all. He was once again the good, honest British soldier with the traitor, he was captured. And it wasn't until later when I got back to Ceylon then, because our headquarters was then in Ceylon. Although there was Battersby, Eric Battersby. Eric Battersby, my staff officer, who was utterly brilliant. And I knew he was brilliant because when I first went there, I was in their mess. I just arrived in India, which I'd never seen before. And then they were all playing cards or doing something, and a man came in with a message. And Eric Battersby got straight up, left his card and everything, and walked straight out to deal with that message. And I knew when I seen it, the others would say, well, all right, I'll come see you later, do something. He walked out and did it. And that was him throughout. He was my staff officer on both operations. And he was utterly brilliant. He looked after me. Everybody else, he knew me. He played me. He was extremely well. And when at the end of the first operation, I said I need some more gold. By the way, they gave me a big block of opium, which is black stuff like that, greasy black stuff. I didn't want to do it. Eventually I just buried it, but I had no idea what I dug a hole and put it there. But then I did ask for some good more gold. I said, we did deeply need of gold. And so I got a message back from him. Said, thank you, Tom. And we appreciate your need. We're crediting your bank account in Calcutta. Now, that was a lovely touch. You see, other people said, no, you can't have anything else. But there was a touch which I had bargained for. It was great.
What were you supposed to do with the opium?
I didn't know, bribe people to do something. I didn't know what I was meant to do with it. They thought, well, let me tell you another lovely story about the money. When we were in France getting the money, when we got the franc notes, they went through a special machine which dirtied them and got them all dirty, and they were brand new, of course, printed in England. And they got to put them in a machine and made them old, and so they looked like genuine ones. Well, when I got to Burma, and they showed me all their brand new, lovely brand new rupee notes, stacks of them. I said, I can't have these. They've not been used. They're brand new. Oh, no. He said, oh, no, it'll be all right. I said, I'm not taking those. Get that. So they had a whole lot of Indians spending days bending them all around, putting them in the mud, folding them over here, getting a whole lot. When I got into Burma, they looked at me and said, what are these? I said, these are no money. He said, they're no good. Of course, they're all dirty. I said, what's your shoulder? I said, no. The rupee note must be able to hold it like that. It must stand up. And the white around the pagoda must be absolutely clean. And all the edges must be perfect. And they did that. Whenever they got passed money about, they went into a little box container and they passed it with great care. And the money was valued as the condition of the note. And that's a lovely story. You know, well, they were. That's our little story.
So, when after you'd met Mansur, did the operation, as far as you were concerned, come to an end?
More or less. There were some African troops who were in the habit of shooting whenever anything happened in the air or anywhere else. And they dug a thing there. He had a funny lot of totally untrained African troops, which were a bit wild. And we all decided it was the safest place for us to get out. By the way, I had told you earlier, I had learned when they were in France that guerrilla forces, resistant forces, cannot operate with an army. And I said, no way, we're not getting involved in this at all. And that was where a lesson came through useful. It was nearly the end of us.
Can I just go back to France for a minute, because your wife has provided me with a cutting from an article called Shoot First by Ronnie Noble, which refers to the operation you were involved in France. And if I can just quote you a bit from it, it says, I'll never forget the next moment. The door opened slowly, and there facing us stood a blonde young man in Harris tweed jacket, corduroy trousers, smoking a pipe. He was the most English thing I'd seen in years. Excuse me, gentlemen, he said, my name's Carew. I dropped in this evening, you know, got lost somehow. When the laughter died down, he gave us the plan. In 3 days we shall be relieved, he said. In the meantime, we must attack the Germans in Besançon. Our attack was most successful. In hard street fighting, we completely harassed the German withdrawal. Do you remember that?
Yes, but I didn't, because I wasn't. That's nonsense. Of course, I wasn't like that. You always are, aren't you? Ronnie Noble was a proper reporter. I don't remember it now. Well, I wouldn't.
But when was this? Just after you'd been dropped?
I presume, yes.
And was it true that in 3 days you were supposed to be relieved?
I don't remember.
Was it true that you attacked the Germans in Besançon?
Yes.
What do you remember about the attack?
They're all. I don't. The whole that French operation was pretty terrible. Yes, it wasn't. My success was my first operation in Burma. My personality, my character, everything else. That was when I really, really did well. And I was just a runner. I was just one of a group of. It wasn't a failed operation because the day I wasn't caught or anything like that. But it wasn't a marvelous operation.
But in Burma, did you stay healthy, you and the others, or
yes,
did
I
you
was.
Fall sick?
Well, I got quite good on the health side. There's a stuff called sulfuranamide powder, and I learned to wounds to pour that in on a wound and then seal it off anyhow you could, with leaves or anything else. And to this day, the medical profession have not learned this. And I do know that every wound and everything, you must isolate it and get the air and let it, seal it off and let the pus build up. It doesn't matter. You never let the air in again until it's absolutely, until they feel it all right, you know, not painful. Then take it off, wipe it, and you've got a perfectly good skin underneath. And I've done it ever since. To this day, I use, here nowadays, I use the masking tape painters use. I don't use ordinary stuff. If I ever have anything, I seal it off straight away. And it always cures up. And this sulfuranamide powder, which I remembered was a marvellous thing, and none of my people ever suffered from the septic wounds or anything like that.